Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. We have the streaking Blackhawks tonight on NBC Sports Chicago. After winning their last three, they hit the road and take on the Winnipeg Jets. Blackhawks pregame live starts our coverage. Bottom of the hour, Pat Foley, Stevie Conrad have the call at 7 o'clock. And the winter meetings finally get interesting just as everybody's leaving. The Orioles have been shopping Manny Machado. Reports say the White Sox very interested. Does it make sense for Rick Hahn to acquire a rental player, or should he stick to the rebuild? Bears try to play Grinch and spoil the Lions' playoff hopes. Can they make it two wins in a row on Saturday? Speaking of the playoffs, Packers are still in the hunt. Is Aaron Rodgers' return the right decision, or too risky for one of the best to ever play the game?
We are not looking to make any sort of move that's aimed at simply jumping up and perhaps contending for a wild card or maybe even the division for 1 year. The focus remains on the long term. Now, we may take some calculated risks along the way. We've repeatedly said we're going to be opportunistic in this market and explore opportunities to make us better. However, again, the goal remains putting us in the best position for the long term, and nothing over the last nothing in the last few days, and certainly nothing over the last year plus, has been done with the intention of deviating from that long-term vision.
And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a really good day. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show. He is veteran sportsman. You catch him all over doing college basketball and football. He's Jordan Bernfield. He is the editor-publisher of Pro Football Weekly. You catch him on The Score as well. He's the great Hub Arkish. And Mark Grody, who is the voice of the pre, the post for the Chicago Cubs radio network on The Score. All right, White Sox in the hunt for Manny Machado. Bob Nightingale from USA Today has respected a name as there is in baseball media. Said the White Sox have the best package on the table currently. So, Jordan, I ask you, with 1 year left of team control, would you pay the big price to get this guy?
I don't think that I would, but I'm just confused by the link between the White Sox and Machado for this reason. It just runs counter to everything that they've done over the last 18 months. Now, would I want to have Manny Machado? Of course. I think he's one of the top 10 players in the game. He's phenomenal. But if the price is giving up some of that prospect haul that you've just acquired and really have not seen come to fruition yet, I don't understand why you do it, especially with the fact that the Orioles are reportedly not giving the White Sox a window to negotiate with them. So if you have him for 1 year and then he leaves, I just don't understand why you'd give up some of your top prospects that you've just gotten for a guy that may only be here a year.
Yeah, I don't claim to be wired to the White Sox, but like everybody made a few calls today, and my understanding is that they're doing this with the intention of signing him long-term, that that's the only way that Rick Hahn wants to do this. There is a second possibility that I created in my own mind. Now, this is a little bit conspiracy theory, but what if Rick Hahn thinks that he can unload a couple prospects that he loved when he got him but doesn't love as much now and get more in return for Machado at the deadline if he can't sign him to a long-term deal? So there could be a backup plan there.
Well, and I think the Hub, too, that and I would disagree a little bit with you, Jordan, that I think it's okay to change on the fly a little bit. Like, you have this plan in place, the White Sox do, and it, in theory, it all looks good. And still, at this point, nobody knows if these prospects, who all look terrific, are going to pan out. So if you have a chance to get Manny Machado, who is 24 right now, I mean, that 24, 25, that fits right into a young core. And if you have a chance to get that guy on the fly, a guy who is probably in his prime, or maybe not even in his prime.
Yeah, he'll turn 26 in July.
Okay, I mean, that fits in with that young core.
If you can get him signed.
My initial comments would be, of course, you can't sign this guy for 1 year. No stop gaps. If he gives you some indication, Machado, you're not going to get a guarantee. Like, some indication from him that he might stay with you beyond next year, then you do what you have to do to get a guy like that.
But to me, that wouldn't even be enough, because I think he's phenomenal. I would love, just as a fan, to have Manny Machado playing
at
Chicago.
Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, who are you taking?
I mean, I think that's a toss-up. I think you can make arguments for either. Personally, I think I would take Harper, but it's close. The point is, he's in that upper echelon of players. I think the world of Manny Machado. He's phenomenal. But I just feel that if we're being fair about this, when Manny Machado becomes a free agent after next year, he's going to get a massive contract. We're talking probably $250 million or something in that range, maybe more. I mean, depending on what the market is, are the White Sox a team that's A, prepared to pay that in the event that they would get him, and B, are they going to be the most attractive team for him to go to? I would argue that there's probably going to be other big market teams with a more attractive offer based on where they're at in sort of the winning window. So I just feel like there's a huge risk that may not be worth taking.
By the way, here's our poll question. Should the White Sox trade for Manny Machado? You see the choices. No, yes, but don't give up any big names. Yes, whatever it takes. For me, look, Dan Lozano is his agent, Beverly Hills Sports Council. He is a highly respected guy. If Dan Lozano says to Rick Hahn, look, I know they won't give you a window, make the deal, the kid's interested, here's the parameters, and Rick said, we'll meet that, we'll get something done, I probably take the risk.
Well,
if he says he's going to test free agency, no shot you're getting Michael Kopech and some of the top guys.
But remember, that's what it would cost.
But, Jordan, one of your questions is already answered. If they're not prepared to pay the top dollar, they're not going to make the deal. Then there's no reason whatsoever to make the deal. So what they're saying, if they're looking at the deal, is they're prepared to spend, whether it's $250 or $300 or $225, whatever it is.
I'm just saying the history of the White Sox would suggest that that's not something. I mean, when was the last time?
Highest contract ever in the history of the franchise.
Albert Bell.
$68 million to Jose Abreu.
Right, oh, wow. So the point is that I agree with you in theory that they must be willing to at least commit more than they ever have, but are they really willing to commit to that? And then we still have not seen, and I love their farm system, I think it's great, but we still haven't seen what any of these guys are going to be. And so you don't really know when the winning window begins. So then if you're the White Sox, you're going to have to say to Machado, well, we think in 2019 or 2020 or whatever it is, that's when we're going to turn the corner. But obviously you don't know when that's going to happen.
Here's the thing, though, too, Jordan. I mean, you talked about, like, it's not the White Sox way to sign a big-time guy. It wasn't the White Sox way for years to completely tear down. I mean,
new way of doing business.
They're in completely new territory. And remember, and I hate to do this to White Sox fans, but to compare it to the Cubs, how about like somebody like John Lester who signed with the Cubs when the Cubs still were an up and coming team? He took a big chance saying
Lester signed with guys that he knew too. Theo and Jed knew him from Boston. There was familiarity
but he doesn't play with those guys.
Right,
so he doesn't have to put up with the losing with those guys.
But, I mean,
he took a big risk in terms of his winning life.
But I think that was a big factor in that. Had Theo and Jed not been the management team of the Cubs, I don't think John Lester is coming to Chicago at that time.
He said that.
Yeah, I mean that was. The reason I think – I agree with your point, but I'm just saying that I think that the stars had to align there, whereas I don't know that there's that kind of relationship for the White Sox.
Any point we're trying to make about what Machado is thinking, we're just sitting here guessing.
Right.
But what we can comment on is what Rick Hahn apparently has in mind and what the White Sox are telling their fans they're prepared to do. And I go back to what I just said. You don't make this deal
if you're not prepared to
pay top dollar to sign him. And so that's why – I like it. What are the odds that any of the kids in the system are going to be Manny Machado? I mean, those are really long odds. So
He's a top, for me, top five, top seven, top 10 guys.
He's a superstar caliber player.
Here's the other thing you got to realize, and I know Bryce Harper is all world, but to answer your question, I absolutely take Machado over Harper because of how much harder it is to find an all-world third baseman
than
an all-world outfielder.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this era of everybody can hit the ball over the wall, it's a good point by Harper.
We're talking about a gold glove third baseman.
Right.
Or shortstop. He says he wants to play short.
I love Machado. I'm just saying you're splitting hairs here between Harper and Machado. I mean, they're two of the best, 5 to 10 players in baseball. So I could totally see that argument. I think he's fantastic. Just the other part of it is, let's say you trade for him, then you commit $300 million to him, then you better hope that obviously they have a belief in the guys that they have, but if some of the young guys that they do keep out of the deal do not work out, do you then lose the flexibility to go augment the team in other ways? I mean, as good as Manny Machado is, and he's great, he's not winning it for you on his own. So if they were to have to commit, 80% of their resources to him in a future deal and you've traded some of the prospects away to get him, then what do you have left for reinforcements?
If you can't play with the big boys, then you're in the wrong game. Jerry Reinsdorf knows. I'm with Hub. He knows what the price of doing business is, and they got a big TV deal coming around the bend here.
And not that this is necessarily an issue for them, but the other thing you got to realize about the Harper-Machado question is clearly it's Machado, because if you get Harper, what are you going to do with Eloy Jimenez? I mean, you've got somebody coming who you think may be in Harper territory. And so now you fix third base. If Jimenez is that player and you keep half these prospects you've dealt for, you turn this thing around in 2 years.
Absolutely. And if they were to do business with Baltimore on Machado, I guarantee you they're going to ask for Eloy Jimenez. And if you know that you got him for the year and you know you're going to then be able to pay him and sign him, is it worth giving up Eloy Jimenez for Manny Machado? Probably. Probably, yes.
Well, yeah, on its face, yes, it would be. But the point is that, I mean, anyone is worth Manny Machado. But again, I just think the strength of the White Sox right now is how great their volume is of prospects, and the idea that some of them could not work out and they still have so many guys that you'd have to make a good futures bet on the White Sox to be good in 2 or 3 years because there's so much talent coming through. But if you then take
up
away
all your
some
talent,
of that
right. Okay,
or
so let's get specific.
And you don't know he can re-sign.
Let's get even more specific then. Yeah. I mean, how many prospects, grade A prospects, do you think the Sox would they have to give up? We talked about Jimenez. Would they have to give up Yoan Moncada?
I would think you got to give up
Lucas Giolito keeps popping up, but I don't know if he's.
To me, the unique thing about the White Sox prospects is that there's a lot of teams that have a lot of prospects. The Sox are unusually top-heavy in pitching, which you don't often see. I'm not sure they have to give up Eloy Jimenez to make this deal.
Yeah, I'm with Hub. Yeah. I think it would be more pitching. I think I've heard they want two major league, close-to-ready arms. Lucas Giolito's in there. Reynaldo Lopez.
Michael Kopech, you'd given him up?
I don't think they're going to have to give him up.
Everybody wants to see that.
They only have 1 year of control left. That's
okay,
it.
But I'm just saying that if you're the Orioles and you know that you can't re-sign him or you don't want to re-sign him, okay. Just looking at it from their side, their fan base is going to be irate if they don't feel like they got the absolute most. I mean, because you get the idea of the reality of trading him because you can't sign him. Okay, fine. But you better get the top of the – I mean, that's what Rick Hahn has done successfully to acquire these prospects, right? I mean, the Cubs get Jose Quintana for Cease and Jimenez, who were the top two guys in the Cubs system.
But you had 3.5 years of control versus one.
And everybody wants totally to see Michael Kopech throw 107 miles per hour at the big league level.
All right. Mitchell Trubisky looked great last Sunday against a banged-up, lousy Bengals team. How will he fare Saturday in Detroit against a Lions team fighting for its playoff life?
Hi, guys.
I'm Tara Lipinski.
And I'm Johnny Weir.
Guess what, Johnny?
What?
The Winter Olympics are right around the corner. And what does that mean?
Yay. That means we get to see Shaun White, Michaela Schifrin, and other top Team USA athletes conquer fresh snow and ice this February on NBC.
So make sure you're ready. Sign up for NBC Sports and Olympics emails by texting POD to 66866. Or you can visit nbcolympics.com/newsletters to receive the latest athlete updates, giveaways, and more.
Message and data rates may apply. Winter is here.
The impressive thing about Mitch and his style is he's very even keeled. He doesn't get real high, doesn't get real low. You don't see a lot of expression, which is okay. You know, he's just a guy that attacks his job. He works hard at it. He prepares. You know, he's very early in, very late out of the building. You know, that position, that's, in my opinion, it's a great trait. You know, I watched Peyton Manning for 3 years and how hard he prepares, that he doesn't want any surprises on game day. And, you know, I see a little bit of that demeanor in the preparation part of it with Mitch, and he's a very young quarterback.
There's John Fox as he talks about his quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, coming off of his best game as an NFL starting quarterback. So your take on what you saw from Mitchell, I know it was against a Bengals team that was banged up beyond all get out.
Yeah, I mean, you can't read too much into it because they were missing six starters on defense and three of them were their three best players. And the guys who stepped in for him, I mean, I'll say it, I don't think they were trying all that hard. I mean, there were some plays that I could have chased down and that's a pretty sad comment. That said, I am more impressed with Mitch Trubisky at this stage than I really ever expected to be. I do think that there's some real traits there. I can see what Ryan Pace sees. And what I thought was interesting about Sunday is that he succeeded because Loggins called the right plays. I don't care who you're playing against. He put him in a position to succeed. He had the right sequencing. He figured out how to use Jordan Howard, how to use Adam Shaheen and Tariq Cohen off of Jordan Howard. Kendall Wright, where's he been, you know, the last 2 months? I mean, you still got to call the play. You still got to throw the ball there. Trubisky's just executing the game plan. So it was a combination of little or no competition and Loggins having a good day. Now, whether he can do that 2 or 3 weeks in a row against better competition, that I don't know.
Right, so do we have, or the Bears have now, this sounds ridiculous, but you have a developing quarterback, obviously. Do you also have, and can you afford to say you have, a developing offensive coordinator who started to figure it out, as you said correctly, in this game? Or do you say, okay, too little, too late, you know? And obviously John Fox is going to be gone, but do you look at Dal Loggins and say, all right, maybe this guy is starting to figure it out?
No.
Or can't afford to do that, can you?
The thing you guys, I'm sure, can agree, or I don't know if you agree, but you can understand this. The thing I hate the most about our jobs is we sit here and talk about firing people and taking away their livelihood like it's
no
big deal.
Yeah.
I don't want to see anybody get fired.
Right.
I hate that. But that's the reality of this business, and that's why these guys make hundreds of thousands, or in this case, millions of dollars a year. They're compensated for a shorter lifespan, okay? Dal Loggins, in his 29th game as the Chicago Bears offensive coordinator, didn't suddenly figure it out. He had a good day. He's in over his head. Maybe in a couple of years more after he works somewhere else. But no, I don't believe that he's the answer as offensive
coordinator. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, how much do you feel like last week was the product of, you know, John Fox has to know what's going to be coming for him and the rest of the staff? And they're like, well, we're going to be out of here. We're A, auditioning for somebody else, and B, you know, what do we have to lose, right? I mean, I know that they're trying to develop Trubisky, but they're not going to be here to see it through. So I felt like part of what I was watching on Sunday was like, we're going to just try a bunch of stuff here because, you know, we're not going to be back.
I think half of that is true. Let's try what we can to get this fixed. I don't think, Jordan, that they go into it assuming or thinking they're not going to be back. They're fighting for their lives. They're fighting for their jobs. They want to be back. They don't want to lose these jobs. What was interesting to me was that, they sequenced things correctly. They used one play to set up another play. They had a good game plan. Maybe it was because they knew where Cincinnati was banged up and where they wanted to attack. But even in that, there were failures. Just because Kendall Wright shows up, where did Dontrell Inman go? I mean, he's your best receiver. He got targeted once. Marcus Wheaton is a $6 million free agent receiver who can't get on the football field. So even though they did better, they still didn't necessarily do good.
So let me ask you your thoughts today. If the coaching job opens, which we all think it will, how attractive is this job because of Mitchell Trubisky?
Well, I don't know about because of Mitchell Trubisky. I get this question all the time, and I can tell you guys emphatically, it is highly attractive. This is the Chicago Bears. This is the heritage franchise in the National Football League. This is the history of the game. This is the third biggest market in the league. And you have not only a young quarterback, who, by the way, has got a long way to go. I mean, look at what's going on with year three with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. These guys are going backwards. And so it is so hard to develop these kids. But you've got a good start. You got a guy you like. More than that, you look at some of the other young talent. You can absolutely build around a Jordan Howard, a Tariq Cohen, an Adam Shaheen. That offensive line isn't all that bad. Defensively, Akeem Hicks and Leonard Floyd and Danny Trevathan and Kyle Fuller, if you bring them back. When you compare where this roster is at right now to the end of the third season under Phil Emery, it's night and day. There is young talent on this football team. It is a highly attractive job. They will have no trouble attracting the top candidates if that's what they choose to do.
But is there not, I get what you're saying, but is there not some trepidation just based on the last 7-8 years, really since Lovey, that they had this failed experiment and then potentially another failed experiment, and there's been a lot of changes, and it doesn't feel like, you know, like the healthiest organizations don't have to change a lot of things. And recently the Bears have been one of those franchises that have kind of turned things over.
I feel like they're getting
healthier.
You know, Jordan, that's up to Ryan Pace. He's in charge now. And as these guys come in to interview, he has to make everybody understand, I'm in charge and we're doing this the right way now. The perception that the McCaskies are a problem is flat out untrue. They do not interfere in the football operations. They do spend the money, okay? The problem, quite frankly, for a number of years was Ted Phillips, who was a business person interfering in football. Now, Ted has said that he doesn't get involved anymore. Everybody I talk to says that is pretty much what's going on right now. And so, again, I don't see it as a negative. I mean, you know, if Ryan Pace sells himself to the top candidates, they're going to love everything else about the situation.
All right. Bulls are doing this tanking thing all wrong. They've won four straight. Nico Mirotic is the biggest reason why. Will they actually be able to trade him, or should they keep him past the deadline?
When the game ends, switch back to CSN Chicago for Bears postgame live. The team will take you through all the key moments from the field, hear from Coach Fox, and get live player reactions. Bears postgame live after every Bears game on CSN Chicago.
Blackhawks go for their fourth straight win tonight, but it'll be a tough one in Winnipeg against the Jets. It'll be electric in there. Pregame Live is coming up next.
Nico, you keep predicting wins. Is it any coincidence that this team hasn't lost since you're back?
What do you think?
I think yes.
I've been telling you guys, you know, I've been very positive, and some of you guys, I'm thinking that you guys thought I was joking, but I was not joking. I was very, very serious, and I tell you, Joe, too, we're going to be 4-0. You know, I think we, like I said, we have to keep building from this. You know, it's going to come some tough games now, but, you know, with me back, we have more chances now.
All right, Nico Mirotic, very confident in his abilities. They're doing this whole tanking thing wrong. They were built to be the worst team, and all of a sudden they rip off four straight.
Well, you know, and as it pertains to Nikola Mirotic, I think the punch meant everything for a couple of reasons, because during that time, there was the swirling talk about how he wanted to maybe be moved, and maybe he did want to be traded, and maybe the Bulls did look into possibly trading Nikola Mirotic, but he realized that there was no trade value for Nikola. So I think he heard that kind of stuff. He was motivated by that. Just the fact that the guy got punched as well, and now he may be working his way out of Chicago by continuing to play.
There's
like this.
There's got to be some trade value there now.
Yeah, I don't think four wins changes it all that much. I mean, the teams they'd be trading with have been scouting the kid since he came over from Europe. They have an idea of what he is and what he isn't. I think we forget. These are kids. I don't care how much money they're making. They're in their early 20s, their mid-20s. I don't like to comment on kids I've never even spoken to. I don't know what's going on there. He looked awfully foolish in those first few weeks after, quote, the punch. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't know how he's fitting in that locker room. I don't know how his teammates feel about this. Those are all considerations as to what you're going to do.
The one thing that I keep thinking is that we have seen in the past, usually it happens in March, ironically, but we have seen in the past that he can string together a few games in a row where he doesn't miss a shot and looks great, which he has done in the last four games. But every time we try to say that, well, that this is where he turns it on, he doesn't.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.